It's the Bob McCowan Podcast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download their online casino and sportsbook app today.
Well, we're going to talk hockey today, but maybe not the topic that Toronto Maple Leaf fans think. The Leafs fired their head coach, John. That's no great surprise.
No.
And it's only the first step in my view of the redoing of this team. Unfortunately, the firing of a coach often is the predecessor of the firing of somebody above him. And usually that's a general manager.
Right.
In other words, a GM fires a coach to place the coach in responsibility for lack of success, where he is worried that maybe he himself will get fired. In this case, I don't think Treliving made the decision. Do you?
Yes, I do.
You think John Treliving
or Brad? Treliving,
Brad made the decision to fire the head coach?
I think I wasn't in the room.
Was involved maybe, but
no, I think that in the end that Brad would sit with Brendan and with Keith and say, guys, I want to fire the coach. And they would say that you're the general manager. That's your call. You have to be comfortable with who you're going to bring in.
I don't believe that for a second. No, well, I don't believe that.
So what do you think the protocol was?
Well, I think Pelly, first of all, was everybody knew that Pelly was in charge, and Pelly either made the decision or he suggested firing the coach. And I think Shanahan, out of fear of his own job, has to go along with it.
See, I respectfully don't see it that way, because I think maybe we'll get some answers a little closer to what the truth was or the actuality was tomorrow when the three of them speak, because they are going to speak on Friday.
But they aren't going to tell the truth. You know that. You know that. They never do in a situation like this. They never tell you exactly what really went wrong.
That's fair. But the one question I have about the scenario is, Keith's been on the job a very short period of time.
Yeah, agreed.
And he has to trust some people around him.
Who then?
Well, I think the two guys he's going to be speaking with. I think he trusts Treliving, and I think he trusts Shanahan.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think that's too bad.
So when you said at the top of the show that this was the first of a few things that needed to happen, what are those other things?
Well, I've talked about this for the last few days, John.
I know, but we have new listeners today.
I think you probably need a president. I think you have to place responsibility for what's happened over the last 8 years on Shanahan, as much as on the coach, as much as on the previous general manager, Dubas, who also got fired. I think that's number one. Number two, you have to make change on the ice.
Right.
And I mean, I'm not saying they will trade all four of the big four, but what I'm saying is Treliving has to shop all the big four and see just what comes out of that. And look at it. If the only deal you get that's any good is Matthews, I say do it. And I know most Leaf fans will say, I'm crazy. 69 goal scorer, we're going to trade him. That's not what the Leaf fans want. They want a cup.
It's funny. I understand your logic. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand your logic. But we've had this discussion with a few people this week. There is obviously something missing. There's something missing in the leadership on the team. Yeah.
Oh, there's lots missing. Yeah. Not something.
No, you don't become a continual 100-point team and then you can't be able to turn it around in the playoffs. That's the key thing. Where's the character? They need some character. Brendan
has talked about this. There have been lots of teams like this. The San Jose Sharks, not many years ago, were everybody's pick every year to win a Stanley Cup.
So the Toronto Maple Leafs are the new San Jose Sharks?
Yes. Yes, I do.
That's a scary thought.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we're going to talk about the New York Rangers.
I'll tell you what, Joe McAlady's going to join us, and Joe's been around the game and understands the game. We'll ask him about maybe the view of the Maple Leafs and the viewing of the firing of Sheldon Keefe outside of Toronto and what people thought about that. So let's do probably that with McAlady. What's that?
He probably didn't think about it much. That's
Joe's
my guess.
Joe's a hockey guy. Joe's a hockey guy.
Maybe. We'll see. Okay. Let's see what he says.
Micheletti with McCowan and Shannon after this on the McCowan Podcast.
Hi, this is Bob McCowan for BetRivers.com. Hey, if you're looking for a sports book or casino app, you should check out the BetRivers Sports and Casino app today. Play all of your favorite casino games for real money anywhere and anytime. Plus, get in the action with each sports game with hundreds of sports betting options. And get ready to feel like a VIP, because you'll earn both loyalty level points and bonus store points on every real money wager you make. You must be 19 plus, available in Ontario only. Please play responsibly. If you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone close to you, contact Connex Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 or speak to an advisor free of charge. BetRivers.com.
Welcome back to the podcast. The Stanley Cup playoffs are on. Rangers are in it. Canucks and Oilers, great game in game one last night. But the news of the day so far is that the Toronto Maple Leafs have fired Sheldon Keith as the head coach of the hockey club. We're joined by the TV voice, one of the voices of the New York Rangers on MSG Network, Joe Micheletti. Joe, your thoughts about Sheldon Keith, who you knew and you were have been around a few times, being fired as the Maple Leafs coach?
Well, you know, first and foremost, I mean, it's I have so much respect for these coaches and what they do and the amount of pressure that they're under. And I'm glad they get paid well for what they have to do. And I like Sheldon, and he was always accommodating to me when the Rangers would play the Leafs, and I always appreciated that about him. But you know, with all the coaches, the numbers of coaches that have gotten fired in the last year and a half, and with the expectations in Toronto and trying to make that next step, it doesn't surprise me. I thought that Toronto looked like a little different team this year. They had more grind to their game, but you know, they didn't score enough, and that's, I'm not sure that's always on the coach, but more so on some of the players. But it doesn't, again, it doesn't surprise me that they've made the move.
Yep. Well, he certainly had a lengthy run by NHL standards. He was the fifth longest serving coach in the NHL before he got fired.
Yeah.
And, you can't say that it was instantaneous decision that was made. And I think you would agree, we will probably see 10 new head coaches next year. That's kind of the average of where we're going right now. One out of every three guys is going to get fired every year. And that's a staggering number, isn't it?
It really is. And I don't agree with that because you see, a lot of these coaches just end up going someplace else and doing a good job. They're good coaches, that old saying, Bob, about, it's easier to fire the coach than it is to make trades. It certainly holds true with the salary cap and the types of contracts that these players have now. There are, in so many cases, they're almost unmovable. Mm-hmm. So, I was thinking about this the other day too, to think that Marty St. Louis, who is still learning to be a head coach in the league, and I think he's done a good job in Montreal with that young group, is now one of the longest tenured coaches in the league. Is pretty staggering, isn't it? It's
yep, crazy. He was sixth. He was right behind Keith in the on the list of tenure, which is, tells you everything you need to know, right?
But but coaches, it's funny you say that. Coaches are the victims of their own success and their own failures. And the best example of that, Joe, is the guy that you cover every day, who has taken six teams now to the Stanley Cup playoffs, which is a record. But Peter Laviolette is one of those guys that says, well, you know what? We'll bring him in for 3 years. We'll quick fix it. We'll turn the franchise around. We'll win the Stanley Cup, or we'll go far in the playoffs, and then we'll get rid of him.
And we'll get rid of him. Yeah, well, and he's done that.
That's right, though. But that's become part of the culture now.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all, John. And I think the other thing that happens with these coaches, they suddenly get pigeonholed into this is the type of coach they are, and does our franchise need that now? And so with Peter Laviolette, you go back over the history of what he's done, his early part of his contract is, in particular, the first years, he's always had excellent first years wherever he's gone. Yeah. And so you look at the Ranger franchise, and now you're talking about Kreider, 33, Zibanejad in his 30s, Panarin in his 30s. So what, you know, not that many years ago was this rebuilding New York Rangers young team. Suddenly that window's closing a little bit because of that core group being in their 30s. So it seemed to make sense to bring Peter in, being a guy that has that, you know, that first year, you know, is when they really get going. And so that certainly lived up to its billing, and he's done a marvelous job in his first year here.
Is there somebody that jumps out of you for the Toronto job? And does the name Craig Berube make that much sense? You know, Craig.
Yeah. And I like Craig. And I think that with Craig, I think he's better having some veteran players on his team. And I think that's a relationship that thrives.
We're getting to the point now in Toronto, Joe. Mitch Marner's not 22 anymore.
Right.
Mitch Marner's 27 or 28. Austin Matthews is going to be 27. I mean, this is not a young team anymore here either.
Yeah, that's why I think Craig Berube would fit. I think he fits that mold. Not that he can't coach young teams, but you know, these coaches that have won a championship, they start thinking differently about their next jobs. Mm-hmm. They start looking at the personnel and they start thinking, do I have a chance to win in the next 3 years? Because that's basically what they have, right? Just as you mentioned, John. So do I have a chance to win? So now Craig Berube with a Stanley Cup championship in St. Louis, I think looks at a roster and says, do I have a chance to win? And when you look at that Maple Leaf roster, and they certainly have some high-end players, I still think they need to make some adjustments to their overall group. And I think Brad Treliving will try to do that. But I think that would be an area, and especially Toronto. If you can win in Toronto, I think that's intriguing to a lot of coaches. And he wouldn't. You know, he's just got that way about him. Nothing. He doesn't shy away from anything. So I think the fit would work.
The norm I see in watching hockey for 60 years is I'm not sure a coach matters anymore in the NHL. And I think there's all kinds of evidence of it. And we think the hiring of a coach is important. And yet the evidence suggests it means nothing. It means next to nothing.
I would disagree with you based on the experience that I've seen this year in the place that I work. And the reason I say that, Bob, is that this is virtually the identical team that the Rangers had a season ago. Mm-hmm. Yet they go into and they end up over 100 points. And you had a coach in Gerard Gallant that just was a totally different style of Peter Laviolette. Gerard Gallant is the type of coach, and I love the guy as a person, and he's a good coach. But his idea about coaching was give the responsibility to the players, leave the locker room to them, they'll figure it out, and we have enough veterans here that they can do that. So if you think back to that series they had against the Devils last year in the first round, where the Rangers win the first two games on the road and then lose four of the next five. And it was a team that made two mediocre goalies looked like they were both Hall of Famers because they never got to the middle of the ice. Everything was the outside. Every play was high risk. There was no threat offensively throughout. There was no pressure. They didn't want to get to the middle where you have to go in the playoffs to be successful. And this year's team is completely different because from day one, Peter Laviolette has taken more control. He's taken more control of the locker room. He's taken more control of the players. Has taken more control of everything. So now he's taken this group and from day one tried to mold them into what he felt would be the type of style that they would need to be successful in the playoffs. And thus far, 6-0 in the playoffs, and throughout the regular season, we saw the same thing. Panarin has never played like this before. Now, is it him, or is it the coach, or is it a combination? I would say it's a combination, because I spoke to him last season before he went back to Russia, and he talked about how disappointed he was in his play. But his entire game was on the outside. Mm-hmm. It was high-risk backhand passes at the blue line, offensive blue line, from one board to the other. He was never on the inside. He never got shots from the inside. He's been a totally different player this year. And I'll as a group, so this might be a one-off, Bob. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying that this particular situation in New York is different because the personnel is basically the same. Now, granted, there's some players that are continuing to grow and they've had they've improved, but their overall, the way they play as a group and the way they played in the playoffs this year as a group is completely different than last season.
Well, let me ask you this. Did Patrick Roy make that much of a difference on the island?
I don't know if he made that much of a difference, to tell you the truth. I mean, I would say, I like Patrick. I'm glad he got back in the league.
Yes.
Because I
think he's a better coach now too, by the way.
Oh, for sure. And I think he learned what, all that he went through in Colorado. You know, he's not a dummy. He learned from that. And so he comes in, and there's not many that more that have as much enthusiasm and can grab a locker room and players individually like Patrick can. And so was that there before? Probably not, but there's not many that can do it like he can. So I think he helped give them an edge from that standpoint. But then the next step is, do you have the personnel to win? And they didn't have enough of the personnel to win.
Well, my sense is that we assign responsibility for success or failure to the coach almost first. And there's something wrong with that. Look at Laviolette, whose team has done well, obviously, this year. How many times has he been fired?
Five.
So five of the teams thought he was crap.
And by the way, Bob, I'm not trying to get ahead of myself. There will be a sixth.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Sure, he will. He'll be fired by the Rangers. And probably within the next year or two.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, don't put a time on it, but we just know that it's going to happen.
Well, statistics show it's probably going to be within 3 years. Probably.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, we classify these coaches in different ways. But at the end of the day, all I'm saying is, how can you change coaches this often if a guy is good? If a guy is really a good coach, he should be there 20, 30 years. You know, that's what it was many years ago in all sports. And we are in a completely different environment now. And it's not just hockey. It's football, baseball, basketball.
You know what I think has changed? Owners think they know what they're doing. I think that's a big part of it, is that owners used to own teams and step back and let the specialists run things, managers and coaches.
Yep.
Now, professional sports are A, investments, and B, toys.
Yeah.
And so now you get owners that thinking they know a lot about certain situations. And why aren't we doing this? And why are we doing that? And he's not doing what I want him to do. Fire him.
Yeah. That, you know, I don't disagree with that at all, John. I think that's evolved over time, because when you say that, I think of a story of when Al Arbor was coaching the St. Louis Blues, okay, prior to going to the Islanders. And John, you've been in that old St. Louis arena, yep. Right? And you've been in that what was the Blues locker room. And right off the locker room, they had the big sauna, right? And so
I hate to tell you, Joe, I've been in the sauna.
You've been in the sauna, right? We weren't in it together. I've been in it too. but there was an off day during the season when Al Arbor was coaching. He was in the sauna by himself. Somebody walks into the sauna with a towel around him and sits down. It was Sid Solomon, the owner. Sits down, he starts talking to Al about his power play. And Al looked at him and said, "What the F do you know about a power play?" And got up and walked out. Okay. So it might have started a little bit back then, but you're right. But it's totally changed now. I don't think that happens anymore that way. But you could, of course, with Al and his personality and his beliefs, you know, back then it was a little bit of a story. But I think that that's true. And I think the other thing is this: professional sports have given players more ownership, so they have more say, right, in who gets hired and who gets fired. So that's changed an awful lot over the years. Didn't used to be that way. The coaches used to be able to say and do anything they wanted, and you either took it and did what they said, or they moved you, and they could at that time. So players have a lot more to say. Players are much more ultra sensitive than they used to be in the past. And so you continue to hear coaches now have to explain more to make sure that when they finish talking to a team or the players individually, that there's a clear understanding of what was said and what they meant. Again, the older days, I don't want to just keep talking about that, but the older days it was, here's the way you got to do it. If you don't do it, you're not going to play. End of conversation, or there wasn't a conversation. So, there's so much more of that. So I guess my point is this: you try to figure out what kind of personalities you have on your team, and now you got to try and match the coaches that are out there, because everything is so close now. It's so difficult to make the playoffs. These teams are so close that one little tweak that can get Panarin to 120 points, or get somebody to just be a little bit better, or your team to think a little bit differently, that might be enough to get them closer to where they want to be.
Well, I think most of it is mental, as far as the coach is concerned. You know, when we were kids, all of us, we had coaches. And what did the coaches do? The coaches taught us how to play, what to do, how to do certain things. At the major league level, coaches don't teach anymore. They really don't. It's all strategic. You know, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And that's part of the dilemma that you face right now, is that a coach has to be a motivator in some way.
Yeah. Right.
If he's not, he's no good.
Yeah.
And that motivation usually only lasts a short period of time, right? Then guys start to tune you out.
Yeah.
And that's the problem we have with professional coaching now, is you have a short shelf life. No matter what you go, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, no matter what you accomplish, you're only going to be there a limited period of time.
Yeah.
How many coaches today have gone 10 years with one organization in the NHL?
Well, no, there's none, I think, Bob. I think
not even Cooper.
Cooper's got to be close, right?
He's got to be close, but I don't. I think it might just be 9 or 10 now.
Okay. Just finished his 9th. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So the three of us grew up, say, in the '60s and seventies. Let's say, back then, think of the coaches and how long they lasted. Toe Blake, Punch Imlach. You know, these are guys. 20 years was more normal. No, they weren't successful all the time.
Yeah, but that was at a time when players had no rights. And
I understand. So what?
You could punish players. You didn't like the way he talked? You were going to Rochester. You don't like what's going on? You were going to Houston.
You know, well, maybe you should bring that back.
Well,
so, you know what? That's not a bad idea sometimes, I think. And I think it would help players to have that kind of fear.
Me too.
The only weapon that a coach has, I mean, you can't yell and scream anymore, is ice time. And then when you do the ice time, it gets brought up and gets magnified so much. Is that even worth it? I don't know. It's a tough position to be put in.
Well, I don't argue that, but I mean, you're going to get criticized at your job no matter what you do. The three of us have been criticized and will continue to be by the public, whether we deserve it or not. That's part of the deal.
Yep. Yeah, that's why I think Joe, your point at the top was they're finally getting compensated to the point where it's okay.
Yeah. No, they deserve it.
Sheldon Keith has two more years on his deal.
Yeah.
The extension hasn't even kicked in and doesn't kick in until July 1st. So he will get some money for the next little while he's trying to search out another job. We're with Joe Micheletti in New York. McCowan and Shannon here on the podcast. Back after this. So, Joe, living in New York, because those of us that live in Southern Ontario, our views about the Maple Leafs might be warped. What is the view of this team as a team on the ice outside of Southern Ontario? Is this an underachieving team? Is this a dynamic team? What kind of team is this?
It's a team with some dynamic players that don't seem to have the right mix to win. That's been my view for a long time. I've thought, and I'm not, it's easy to say that now, but I just thought at the time when Kyle Dubas was there, I think he was spending too much money in the wrong places, because I'm not talking about the regular season. I'm talking about winning championships.
Right.
So you come down to winning championships now, and what's almost universal is you can't win without a great goaltender, right? It's almost universal. Maybe go back to the Detroit Red Wings. Love Chris Osgood, but he wasn't considered one of the top goaltenders in the league. But their team was just so dominant pre-salary cap.
Pretty good with Nick Lidstrom in front of you.
Exactly. but it's, you just go back to game two with, Rangers and Carolina the other night. And somebody asked me before the series, if there had to be a difference in this series, what do you think it'll be? I said, if it comes down to one save, Shesterkin's going to probably make it. Anderson probably won't. And it could be as close to that as in the series. So even you go back to game two, and Anderson, I give him credit, especially towards the end of the game, he played really well. But Shesterkin saved the game for the Rangers. It's plain and simple. He won the game for him. And now here they're up to, on the special teams, of course. But if you don't have that guy to start your franchise, the chances of winning a championship are very, very difficult. They're almost nil. And then you better have a group of defense that, someone, first of all, that is a dominant defenseman offensively that can score and that can play 25 minutes or 30 minutes a game. And they don't have that. So I just think that the money that was spent, there was too much emphasis on giving too many forwards that kind of money, which then limits you to wanting to do what you really need to win a championship, and it starts from the back end.
Right. Agreed. 100%.
Okay, so now that you're on the Rangers, I've been saying this all year. I don't think Vincent Trocheck gets enough credit for the player that he is. With all the stars that are on that team and all the stars in the National Hockey League, Vincent Trocheck, all he does is win the key faceoffs. He makes the key plays. Game two, he did everything. It was amazing. And yet he doesn't get as much credit as he deserves. Or is he getting it now, Joe?
He gets it from the coach. We try to give it to him during the course of the regular season. He still doesn't get enough because the conversation in the last few days was Panarin got snubbed from not being a finalist for the Hart Trophy. But the most important forward on the Rangers is not Panarin, it's Trocheck. Really? Plain and simple. He played more minutes than any other forward. As
he
you mentioned,
more minutes than anybody.
On the other night. Yeah. Key faceoffs, kills penalties, plays the power play, and he has a playoff style mentality every game. And this is someone, he's not big. You know, he's 185 pounds or so, and can do it all and can make plays. And so Panarin's had, you have to give Trocheck some of the credit for what Panarin's done this year. And on the other side, you've got this kid in Alexis Lafreniere who really never played right wing. They throw him over there. And even though Trocheck didn't join the line till 10 games into the season, but when he did, he helped Lafreniere have his best season by miles. Lafreniere's turned into a tremendous player now. And I think Trocheck deserves some credit for helping him get to that level. So I'm with you. Trocheck does so much, and he's become the most important forward that this team has.
You have watched a lot of hockey over the years. Is this Ranger team good enough to win the Stanley Cup?
Yes, they are. They're good enough because they can win when they shouldn't. And when you can win games, when you're outplayed, and you walk away from a game, go, how do we do that? I mean, 28 times this year, which is a new franchise record, they've come back from deficits in games. So they have a mentality, Bob, that doesn't matter if we get behind. In fact, we'll get behind by two.
Right.
We have this team confidence. And when you have that, when you have this, this confidence that you can beat anybody, and even if you get behind, there's no panic, that you feel you have enough weapons, and last line of defense, the guy that can stop the puck, like Shesterkin has done, and Jonathan Quick had a fabulous season as the backup and won them all kinds of games. When you have that, it gives your team this extra sense of confidence and this extra feeling that, bring it on. We can do whatever it takes to win. And so, a lot has been said about their 5-on-5 play all season. It's not even close to being near the top of the league. And they clearly got outplayed 5-on-5 in game two against Carolina. Mm-hmm. Yet their special teams have been more than special, especially going down the stretch of the regular season in the playoffs. They're even better than what they were before. And you get the goalie. So you win by special teams and goaltending, and then, you kind of figure it out along the way. And that's right. Their mentality. And so that's why I would say that, in particular, first and foremost with the goalie, that gives them a chance to win.
I was thinking about this the other night. Since 1990, for all intents and purposes, what's that? 34 years ago. There really are only three starting goalies for the New York Rangers.
Yeah.
Mike Richter, Henrik Lundqvist, Igor Shesterkin.
Right.
That's amazing.
It's the franchise and the fans in New York have been so spoiled by their goaltenders that when they're off a little bit, they go, the guy can't. If they would just watch other games around the league, look at last Vancouver Edmonton last night. I mean, is somebody going to make a stop? I mean, I know there were a couple of deflects, but listen, the goaltending was poor. You don't see that in New York. You just don't see that. And people criticized Jonathan Quick, when they signed him in his previous 2 years, his numbers were terrible. And I'm thinking, everything gets past him. And he didn't have a real good preseason either. He didn't look very good. A lot of shots were beating him. And then Benoit Allaire gets a hold of him. And we've talked about Benoit before. He's one of the he's someone that should go into the Hall of Fame for what he's done for goaltenders. Because Benoit Allaire gets together with Jonathan Quick, and they talk, and all they do, they have, maybe I looked at this, they should, make a couple adjustments, gives him his confidence back. And in the first half of the year, he was the better goaltender. He should have played in the All-Star game, not Shesterkin. And then after the All-Star game, Shesterkin got back to what he was because they took a week with Benoit Allaire, and they let Jonathan Quick play the next two games coming on the All-Star break. And then Benoit Allaire got Shesterkin ready, and away he went. And he's hardly allowed a bad goal since. So,
well, we talk about you can't win a Stanley Cup unless you have great goaltending. And you probably can't get close to winning a Stanley Cup without great goaltending. I subscribe to that, I suppose. But, you know, you've had 30 years of Ranger hockey with three great goaltendings.
It's amazing.
And how many Stanley Cups have you won?
One.
Right.
That's really quite astounding, I think.
It is. I think the other thing it does, Bob, is it gives you an idea how difficult it is to win. I mean, to get through, I think you have to have some luck. The goaltending you just mentioned, you got to try and stay injury free if you can, to whatever level that is. Everybody's hurt, of course, but can those players keep playing, your top players? Can they stay in the lineup? Now, I was talking to Jonathan Quick about that back a while ago, where we just sat and we talked about that 2012 team in LA and how they had to play going down the last 2 months. They had to win just about every game, and they knew that, and they did. And he said, then we had a chance to win the division. We lose the last two games, finish eighth in the conference. And then they had to, every series was on the road. But he said, we got on a roll. We kept everybody healthy. And then once they get on a roll and they had him doing what he does, you know, away you go. So you need a lot of elements besides goaltending to be able to win, but, sure. But you're right. It's been a long wait, 30 years.
Yeah.
And that's why everybody's so hyped up, because they think they've got a chance again this year.
I'm glad to see you stayed up late to watch the 5-4 Canuck victory. That was good of you, Joe. Okay. Well,
if you think that, then go ahead.
But what'd you make of Florida Boston last night? I mean, first of all, Boston, I didn't expect Boston to have anything left in the tank after the 7-game series, and they go and win in Florida the first night.
Yeah.
But then we saw some good old fashioned intimidation, or trying to intimidate the opposition last night to get prepared for the games in Boston. What'd you think of that?
Yeah. It was expected. I thought it was just a flip flop of emotional teams in the second game. Florida didn't have, because, you know, it could easily have been all the time off, even though Colorado might say, well, it only took us one period. But they hadn't played in a while. Boston didn't have to think about it. And they had arguably, you know, going into that game, if not the best, one of the best two goalies in the playoffs in Swayman playing.
Right.
So that certainly helped them. They jumped on Florida early, and Florida couldn't find their game. Flip-flop, I thought Boston didn't have anything last night. You know, they finished, I think, with 15 shots or so, and Florida knew they had to win. And then we saw the Florida team, obviously, with their depth and, you know, go right on down the line, show why they were one of the best teams in the league. What happened at the end, you know, it didn't surprise me at all. And I think that if you're Boston, you're trying to figure out, even though they've had great success against Florida, they haven't lost to them this year. But if you're Boston, I still think that you've got to try and find a way to get some sort of an edge against a team that certainly has more depth than you do.
Florida's the better team, though, right?
They are. Yeah, for sure.
They're
the better team. Yeah, they're the better team. And so with Jim Montgomery, and that's why he let Pasta go out there and, you know, he gave him the shrug of the shoulders and said, yeah, you want to go fight him? Go ahead. Where you go? So, you know, it doesn't happen. So I think with Boston, those are the types of things that you're probably going to need to try and win this series. Things that are unusual and different. And you're not going to beat them getting in a track meet. You're not going to beat them with, you know, the goaltending is even. And so, you know, maybe that sends a different kinds of message to everybody, and that's enough to get them through. But it's going to take something, because I still give Florida the edge.
Yeah, me too. Okay, Joe, hit them straight today, will you?
I'm going to try, yes. Took a lesson yesterday.
And what was the lesson?
The lesson was stay down, don't roll the hands, keep the face, you know, closed, Man, got work to do. But I'll be finished in time to watch a game tonight, so that's good.
That's good, yeah.
Joe, playing out of Whippoorwill, Joe Micheletti. Micheletti on the first tee. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, John, Joe. Great to be with you. Hey, Bob, great to see you. Glad you're doing well.
Good to see you, pal. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Bob and I will be back after this. So that means there's five coaching openings, Bob, in the National Hockey League right now, including Winnipeg, where Rick Bowness left, Seattle, and a couple of others. Travis Green got hired in Ottawa yesterday. Lindy Ruff, we're recycling coaches again. This goes back to the discussion with Joe about, you know, making sure they get paid enough to coach, because they're not going to last too long. But
what did I say? There would be 10 new head coaches next year.
I think the number in the last 18 months is we're close to 18 coaches in 18 months.
That's crazy, isn't it?
It is. It's lunacy. And here's the other thing. I do think there are a ton of teams sitting, waiting, praying that Joel Quenneville will become available at some point. Now, Joel Quenneville is suspended by the National Hockey League.
Right.
For everything that went around Chicago. But Joel has continued to be paid by the Florida Panthers, but that contract ends June 30th. You have to wonder if this summer, early in July, the commissioner will lift the suspension from Joel Quenneville and allow Joel to be a coach again in the National Hockey League.
Do you think the Toronto Maple Leafs would be interested?
I think if Joel Quenneville was on the market, 15 teams.
Well, I know that, but would the Toronto Maple Leafs be one of the teams? Team he played for, you know.
Absolutely.
And Joel lived right around the corner from me when I lived in Mississauga in another life. So I know he's got Toronto roots.
So here's what I'd be doing. If I was Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, you know what I'd be doing?
No.
I'd be taking Larry's private jet, and I'd have Larry and Keith and Brendan fly to New York and talk to the commissioner and say, Gary, we need Joel Quenneville. Will you please allow us, the Toronto Maple Leafs, because we are important to the success of the National Hockey League. We put more revenue into the league than any other team. Please give us a chance to hire Joel Quenneville.
I'm sorry. I like Quenneville. You know, I have nothing against him.
Yeah.
I'm just of a mind right now that coaching in the NHL is insignificant. It doesn't really matter.
Oh, well. There are numbers. You heard Joe about Peter Laviolette. Chris Knobloch did an amazing job.
Peter Laviolette got fired 5 times. How come did he get smart all of a sudden?
But it becomes the short term fix, Bob. That's what happens.
No, that's what they do. They do that.
Yeah.
Because who knows? They think it's the right thing to do. They're trying to save their job. Whatever. Is it the right thing to do? And in my mind, a coach in the NHL does very little that's influential. Very little. Our coach taught us how to play, right? That's what coaching means, is teaching. How much teaching goes on in the NHL?
No, you're half psychologist, half strategist. That's what you are.
Period.
All right. Well, we'll figure out what's going on. See what happens with the Maple Leafs and Sheldon Keith. He won't miss any paydays for the next couple of years. That's the positive side.
And he'll wind up in Pittsburgh.
They already have a good coach. Mike Sullivan's a good coach. Mike Sullivan's got a 3-year extension. Mike Sullivan's
coaches are made to be fired, John. We just documented that. Right?
Yep. I think Mike Sullivan's there for a while. That's just my gut. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Bob.
Okay. See you, John.
Thanks for listening and watching the McCowan Podcast.
It's the Bob McCowan Podcast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download their online casino and sportsbook app today.